Hello and welcome to day two of the Daily Roland Garros show for the Tennis Menu. Val Febbo here with you. What a night it's been. There's been some very long matches. There's been some short ones. A lot of the women's seeds have gone through, but a lot of the men's seeds have gone out. It's been a day of upsets, but the balls still causing a lot of problems and the conditions as well. Also, It's been an unbelievable morning of tennis. And yeah, Lorenzo Giustino and Corentin Moutet playing the second longest match in Roland Garros history. We'll talk a little bit about that. We'll talk about why the Aussie men are struggling so badly on the clay. We'll talk about the players' positions on court. Plenty to get through. Mark Sifullis, the best high-performance coach in the business, is joining me. Mark, how are you, mate?
I'm going very well. Thanks, Val, and welcome to you, Joel, also. But it's great night. A lot of rain over in France. I don't know what's going on. I think it's the wine season, and the rain's coming down to grow those vines for the Frenchmen. But yeah, it's very interesting conditions, and I really want to touch on that because I think from a coaching perspective and obviously from a playing perspective, to understand how to combat certain conditions is really important. And it's almost about beating the conditions before you beat the opponent. I really want to touch on that as we go along today.
Yep, very exciting stuff. And you're almost trying to take my job introducing Joel for me. But Joel Ferrucci, how are you, mate?
Good Val, good Mark. Interesting night of tennis. So yeah, keen to crack into it.
Very interesting. Remember, Limba with Lauren, our very own package run by Lauren Scopel, inspired by gymnastics-based training to keep you injury-free. Just $59.90 per year, US dollars on thetennismenu.com. It is a great package. I'll probably need that with the bursitis I've got in my hips just to try and fix myself up there. So, Lauren, you got your work cut out for you, but I'll buy the package and get on board. But we'll start with the results from last night. And again, the men's results, I think, pose some more interesting discussion topics. Rafa Nadal, despite his talk of the condition, 6-4, 6-4, 6-2 over Igor Gerasimov of Belarus. Dominic Thiem, well, it was a tough first round match between him and another first one-time Grand Slam winner, Marin Cilic, 6-4, 6-3, 6-3 in favour of the Austrian. It was a supreme performance. Alexander Bublik has beaten Gael Monfils. You said it on Friday, Mark. Depends which Gael you get. And the result could go either way. Bublik has defeated him 6-4, 7-5, 3-6, 6-3. Daniel Medvedev, also out. He's fallen to Martin Fucsovics, 6-4, 7-6, 2-6, 6-1. An unbelievable day of upsets. And they continued. Another Kazakh, Borat country. And it's going gangbusters there. Mikhail Kukushkin has defeated Fabio Fognini 7-5, 3-6, 7-6, 6. Love that last set. I do want to talk to you about that as well today, Mark, because we saw the scoreline and the progressive score of the points and everything that happened. Fabio seemed to throw that set pretty quickly once he knew it was over. So pretty unbelievable. Karen Khachanov through Pierre-Hugues Herbert, also through Lorenzo Giustino over Corentin Moutet, as we said, 6 hours and 5 minutes. One of those sets was a 6-love. That was the opener. Moutet winning that 6-love. 6-7 to Giustino in the second and third. 6-2 to Moutet in the fourth. And then 18-16 to the Italian in the fifth. Unbelievable tennis there. John Millman out, falling to Pablo Carreño Busta in the first round. 6-3, 6-2, 7-5. The US Open semi-finalists. Joel's mate Adrian Mannarino is out. Albert Ramos defeating him 6-4, 6-3, 6-love. Guido Paya, Tommy Paul over James Duckworth. Lorenzo Sonego also through Pedro Martinez. Aliage Bedene. Yoshihito Nishioka with a big win over Felix Auger-Aliassime. He seems to struggle in the conditions. The big Canadian. Cam Norrie also out in five to Galan of Colombia. Yuri Vesely through Ninko Milojevic. Also through over Philip Kranjevic, my pronunciation this morning is going so badly. I'm really struggling. Jack Sock also threw over Riley Opelka. Didn't expect that one. Jan Lennard Struff over Francis Tiafoe. Casper Ruud, Joel's unfriendly ghost, is also through over Yuichi Sugita. And Tennis Sandgren over Hubert Hurkacz, 11-9 in the fifth. So some big results there. I think the biggest one were the three upsets sort of on the second row of the Roland Garros website. Monfils out, Medvedev out, Fognini out. It's just absolutely crazy that we're seeing this. Is this to do with the conditions, Mark? And is this to do with these three guys love the ball coming up to them and getting the ball in their hitting zone so they can dictate the rallies? But what's happening is the ball is kind of skidding along the ground. And I saw that during Thiem and Cilic last night. it's dropping a lot. Is that something that guys like Monfils, Medvedev and Fognini will all struggle with?
Yeah, it's interesting because the courts are extremely slow, and watching what a lot of players are doing to combat that. Now, I know Rafael Nadal is notorious for sitting in the first row of the stands to return a ball. And he actually isn't doing that in this tournament. He's holding his position. He's coming forward a lot more often. It'd be interesting to see the court position stats, but it looks like the players are having to stand up on the court. Now, there's no doubt Medvedev and Fognini love to be able to counterpunch the ball and utilize what's coming onto them, and they just couldn't do it at this tournament. And it's really interesting, whereas Monfils is a bit different. Monfils likes to be able to generate his own ball speed, and he plays those funky kind of points. But, you know, it's interesting to watch it because I feel like Dominic Thiem has had to also adjust. Early on in the match, he was really far back, and it looked like as the match went on, he started to get up the court a little bit, get on the offense a little bit, because Marin Cilic was trying to take the time away from him. Now, you know, on these slow courts, you cannot get caught too far back, because the other thing that's happening, boys, is that the players are now understanding how slow the court is, and the drop shot has become a huge element of this year's French Open. And if you can see how many drop shot points are being won, it's actually incredible because the ball is dying on the drop shot. So you can't get caught too far back, otherwise you're going to get caught up the court a little bit too much. So, you know, really interesting results overnight. Even Félix de Lissiem, like it's a huge result where he's gone down in the first round, obviously of his home slam. I thought that was a really interesting result also. But, you know, it's going to definitely throw up some surprises as the tournament goes on, because these players are used to playing in the summer. They're used to playing in the faster conditions. And this year's French Open definitely is not doing that. And it's totally opposite.
It is the complete opposite. And I think seeing players wearing long sleeves and Andy Murray wearing leggings and leg warmers, it's crazy. It's like we're playing winter tennis. And Dominic Thiem coming out last night saying that he loves the conditions because he's from Austria. I'm not even going to attempt it. I'll have it first before I do it. But Joel, looking at it now, I know Medvedev is one of your favourite players to watch, and also Fabio Fognini, we do love him. But looking at the Medvedev result, what did you make when you saw that this morning? Because if you look at actually the stats of this match, Medvedev was just completely. It was completely different to what we're used to seeing from him. He hit four double faults, only 60% of his first serve, won only 64% and 48% on his second serve. He came into the net a lot, 36 times on clay, which is pretty unbelievable. And for someone that's such a good returner to only have 9 break points in 4 sets and then face 13 himself when he didn't get broken until the quarters of the US Open, it's pretty unbelievable.
Well, look, I think it was a result that when I saw it, I was surprised, but I didn't really sit up and spring out of my chair and go, wow, he's lost. Because obviously we spoke the other day about how Daniil has had a poor run on clay. It's now 6 straight clay defeats dating back to Barcelona last year. And also, I think, you know, when I look at a guy like Martin Fuchsowicz, he is a really, really dangerous player. And that's something that we spoke about on earlier shows as well. When the draw came out, I don't think Daniil would have been overly pleased. I mean, I'm sure he still would have backed himself, but Martin Fuchsowicz has done a lot of damage in the last couple of years. And I remember watching him at the AO, albeit on a different surface, against Roger Federer. And he was really good against Roger. And I think from memory, he might have played him more than once on that surface. He's run into him a couple of times.
He's played at the Australian fourth round twice, actually.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, Martin is a player that we've, in that respect, we've been fortunate to see a bit of him, and he can do damage. So, I was surprised, but I wasn't completely stunned that it happened, albeit I'm still disappointed that Daniil couldn't win, because we're just waiting for this guy to make that breakthrough. And, you know, maybe it was never going to be at this slam, but nevertheless, you know, when a big seed like that does go out early in the first round, you can't help but feel a little bit disappointed.
Yeah, I think so. And Mark, we'll come back to you. None of the Australian men have taken a set so far at Roland Garros. Vukic has lost in straight. Thompson's lost in straight. Duckworth's lost in straight. Milman has lost in straight. Demonor has lost in straight. Pretty dire situations. Now, Australian men have always struggled on clay. I don't know why. And look, is this something that... Is this to do with the conditions, the fact that they haven't even taken a set? Because you think Jordan Thompson against Radu Albot, you'd think you'd be able to get a set off him. And then if you look at the results in previous years, we obviously don't have many clay courts here. Yes, there's some at Melbourne Park, but other than that, there's really not much of that traditional clay. What can we do to change that? Because it seems as though the women do so well on the clay and the men just struggle completely.
Yeah, it's a really good question. And obviously, growing up here, we understand that there's just no clay courts. Obviously at Melbourne Park, they put in a few European clay to give us an opportunity to practice on it a little bit more. But if you don't grow up on it, and this is the thing, like if you look at the South Americans that come over here, maybe barring someone like Rafa Nadal, but you look at those sort of guys, they come to the hard court and they struggle. The game's too fast for them. You know, they can't adapt to the hard courts like we do. But we go over there and we struggle on the clay because it's basically what you grow up on and how you've developed your strokes for that surface and for that style of game. And we're not made for clay courts, there's no doubt. I mean, Jordan Thompson grew up in Sydney, hard courts and synthetic grass. And Melbourne's very similar. It's hard court and synthetic grass with a little bit of Anticar, which is a very poor man's version of clay. You look at those sort of concepts and, you know, we're not ready for clay, and it's unfortunate. But at the same time, with the way that the scheduling is now at the ATP WTA Tour, it's only about 25% of the world's tournaments at that level are on clay, and the rest of them are on faster surfaces. So you can make the argument you could either go one way or the other. And they say that growing up on clay helps you tactically. Well, yay and nay. Well, I think it's a bit of both. If you're a good enough coach, you can coach any surface in any way. But, you know, you're not going to have the results on every single surface except for your top three, who are just obviously absolutely incredible at the game. So, you know, I think we've got to look at the majority of players. And Australians do struggle on the clay because we don't have access to it. We don't grow up on it. It's not our primary surface. So, yeah, it is a real interesting question, though, and whether or not we can change that. Now, I know Alex de Minaur grew up over in Spain, which is interesting. So, after 12, he basically spent the rest of his development years in Spain. So, just whether or not in Spain they utilised the clay as much as they did the hard or vice versa, I'm not too sure. But, yeah, it is a challenge for us in Australia. But at the same time, you know, we've got, five or six players now inside that top 100. And I guess, you know, if they can do okay at the Australian Open, they can do okay at the US Open and at Wimbledon, maybe French Open we can bypass a little bit. But, yeah, you are right. It's definitely a little bit of a concern.
Well, Alexei Popperin to come tonight. So he plays Lloyd Harris. So, look, you think the way he plays on the clay, he's grown up at the Mauritoglou Academy. I think he should be okay. And his game does suit the clay courts as well. He should be able to adapt to the conditions. And Mark Polmans has played through qualifying as well. Got a lucky loser spot. So it'd be interesting to see what happens with those two there. But, Mark, just looking at some of the other results, is there anything that's really that's caught your eye in terms of even the like Lorenzo Justino and Corentin Moutet, 18-16 in the fifth? What do you generally feel like? So, say after a tight three-setter that goes 3 hours, what are you feeling? And then oppose that to after 6 hours, what are you starting to feel in your body? And I know Joel and I are probably wincing at what's about to come out of your mouth, but what do players start to feel? Or is it just sort of every player is different in that situation?
Yeah, every player is definitely different, and it's very interesting. I remember playing, had a player playing the Australian Open in 2012, I'm going to say it was either 11 or 12, and played a first round match that went to a really tight third set. It was a long match, three-set match, but it was a really long match, and he hadn't played a match like that in a long time, and we finished at midnight. And I'll never forget, because he was so sore and so tired, we actually got them to open up the ice baths. We did an ice bath that night. We had massage, we had stretching, we had the food. By the time we got home, it was 4 a.m. And, you know, the recovery that goes into that, and then you get into sleep and try not to change the sleep patterns. So he slept until about 9 or 10 in the morning. So we didn't want to change it too much. He got up, we got active, we had a little bit of hit in the afternoon, and then did another ice bath recovery and then went to bed at a normal time that night to try and regulate the sleep patterns. But it was really hard because so many players respond so differently. And who knows how these players are going to respond. I mean, the courts are heavier. The rallies are probably going to be longer. The fatigue on the arm is going to be as brutal as the fatigue on the legs because the balls are heavier, the conditions are heavier, so therefore there's more force going through the arm. Now, on any particular day, on a normal hitting day, this 30 kilograms of force that go through your wrist and your elbow on every single ball you hit. 30 kilos of force. Now, you think of now with the heavier balls, the heavier conditions, the heavier courts, you're probably looking at about 35, 40 kilos of force every single time. So not only do they have to recover lower body, but their upper body becomes as vitally important in that recovery process. So who knows how these guys are going to recover, and who knows who's going to get through. It's going to be a battle of the fittest, a battle of the strongest, and who's the most prepared. And, you know, that's where I guess the question marks are over Nadal, not having played many matches going into this. But, you know, it's going to be a very, very interesting probably next couple of rounds to see which players actually get over that fatigue in that first round or two.
I think so. And yeah, it's going, I'm very excited to see what does happen, because 18-16 in the fifth is obviously very, very, very long. But we'll move over to the women's draw, where Petra Kvitova and Serena Williams did quite well to get through. Kvitova over O'Shan Dodan, 6-3, 7-5. Serena Williams was pushed early by Kristi Ahn, but then 7-6, 6-love. So she ran away with it. In the end, Lisa Cornet through Kiki Bertens, dropped the first set, but she's through as well. Alina Svitolina as well. But Garbiñe Muguruza, Joel, Tamara Zidanec pushed her literally to the brink, 3 hours and 1 minute. Muguruza 7-5, 4-6, 8-6. That's not a result I think we were assuming we'd see so early for Muguruza, considering how well she played in Rome and her prowess on the clay.
Yeah, definitely not, and probably a result that was a little bit too close for comfort for her. We know that, you know, when it comes to the first round, the favourites, the bigger players, sort of like to, you know, get it done rather quickly. You know, we look at, I guess, on the men's side as a point of reference, a guy like Rafael Nadal probably didn't play that well against Gerasimov, but got it done reasonably quickly. So, look, I think Garbiñe maybe won't be that happy that, you know, she was on court for that long. But also, you know, you can look at the flip side of things. And might actually direct this to you, Mark, but a favourite getting that early test, being on court for that long, I guess the way I see things can, you know, could potentially be of advantage, the fact that they are playing. So, yeah, I mean, what do you think of that, Mark? Is that like a valid argument that, you know, the bigger players, if they're on court for longer, can that sort of set them up, or are you of more of the mindset where you just want to go on court and get the job done and get off?
That's interesting, because I actually feel like some of the Grand Slam winners over the last few years have always had a scare in the first few rounds, and either lost a set or actually been pushed early on. I think that actually kickstarts their campaign. And I feel like being a coach, having a player to do that would be ideal, you know, to get a bit of a wake up to go, you're not going to cruise through this. You're not going to get to a quarterfinal by just walking through. How about you wake up and get yourself prepared and be a little bit more diligent in your preparation and what you need to do. So, you know, I think that's a great little scare for Garbiñe. I think having time on court also is not a bad thing at this stage, especially if you haven't had much time on the clay. I think, as we spoke about yesterday on our show, and it's, I think, you know, for anyone who hasn't seen the show, it's interesting that a lot of the qualifiers got through in that first round and continue to get through, and lucky losers who have played and spent time on the clay. So for Muguruza to be able to spend some time on the clay is actually not a bad thing moving into the next few rounds. Now, as long as she's physically capable and okay, then I think the time on court actually will serve her well. The scare will mentally serve her well, because she'll now be switched on to be a little bit sharper and say, hey, from that first point, I've got to be on. And she knows the conditions a bit better now. So I think, you know, that's going to help her. And I think that would be an ideal scenario. Same as Serena having a little bit of a scare in that first set, obviously saying, hey, wake up a little bit and switch on for the second. And then that she did. So it's actually not a bad thing, I think, for these top players to get a scare early on in the tournament.
Agree. And yeah, I look, and sometimes it does go well, but sometimes I guess the next round they can come out and lose, because it means they are just generally in bad form. So fingers crossed that's not the case, because we want to see Garbiñe go very deep in this tournament. She's one of the contenders. Angie Kerber, she's out. Lost to Kaya Juvan, 6-3, 6-3. Iga Swiatek over Marketa Vondrousova, 6-1, 6-2. Last year's finalist is gone. Madison Keys also out after Zhang Shuai dispatched her, 6-3, 7-6. I said Keys would make a semi-final, so again, do not listen to my viewers. Yeah, not great. Svetlana Peronkova over Andrea Petkovic, 6-3, 6-3. But interesting quote, guys, from Petkovic overnight. She pretty much said that she is enjoying her tennis more than ever now, and she feels more relaxed. And she said it's kind of come as a bit of a double-edged sword because she's kind of feeling more positive and not taking anything for granted. But now she's at the age where her body just keeps giving out on her. So I think, is that something that happens a lot, Mark, where players just sort of find that love for the sport too late? And then they kind of realize what might have been.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you don't know what you got till it's gone, right? And I think we witnessed it at the US Open with the three mums who have stepped away from the game for a little bit, come back and had great results. You think of the Ash Barty scenario, Pekovic being out with a lot of injuries over the past few years. And I feel like when you step away from something, you realize how much it really means to you. And I know that from a coaching perspective right now. And, you know, at times during normal coaching, I get really tired and go, I'm really frustrated. And, you know, how much can I really take of this? And then it gets taken away through the COVID situation. I haven't coached for 6 months and it's like, I'm just itching to be back on the court. And it's, you don't know what you got until it's gone. And obviously Pekovic has smelt the roses and realized that, hey, I really love this sport and I don't want to give it up and, you know, I want to play forever kind of thing. And it's an interesting one because your results become better and you play better, you play freer, you play with no shackles around your ankles. You can actually allow your racket to flow rather than hold back and be so tight, so nervous that you're going to lose or play poorly. So it just frees the mind up a little bit when you're in that mind frame.
Yeah, it does. And I think it's great. Hopefully we can see her get back. She's a very quality player, former top 10 in the world. But yeah, Peronkova threw 6-3, 6-3. Sue Shea also threw as well. Renata Zarazua from Mexico, the first Mexican in 20 years to win a Grand Slam main draw match at Roland Garros, 6-1, 6-2 over Elsa Jacquemont. Unbelievable win. The 22-year-old had to get through qualifying. So another qualifier, as you said, Mark. Just unbelievable. And then continuing on, more qualifiers. Sara Errani, former finalist, she destroyed Monica Puig, 6-2, 6-1. And again, how Puig is an Olympic gold medalist? Look, I don't know. I really don't, because she's not done anything since. It's still her only title. And that baffles me more than anything. The fact that her only title is an Olympic gold, but I don't know. Carolina didn't have much of a chance against Christina McHale, but
had to, didn't you?
it had to be done. 6-2, 6-4 in favor of the American. And Amanda Anisimova, last year's semifinalist, she's through 6-2, 6-love over her opponent as well. Christina Pliskova through Bernarda Pera as well. Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova, big win over Svetlana Kuznetsova, 6-1, 2-6, 6-1. So, big win there. Yeah, Pavlyuchenkova's one, a funny one. She does have the game, and she's made the quarterfinals at all four slams, Joel, but I don't know. She's in such a talented junior player. She won two Australian Open junior titles. How do you see her progressing at this tournament? And do you think, can she finally just get to that semi-final?
Yeah, I don't know. She's a bit of a barometer. I think she would have been very pleased to get past Svetlana Kuznetsova, who is just perennially, yeah, exactly, former champion and just perennially that dangerous on the draw on pretty much every surface. Look, Anastasia is an interesting one. As you said, Val, she's a bit hard to sort of get a read on. I don't know. I've always sort of seen her as a bit of an all-quarter. So, look, I don't know, maybe. But she's kind of floated around around the 20s in the rankings. So, look, it'd be a nice story, certainly, if she could go on and get it. But when it comes to this Roland Garros, she's probably not a player that's really crossed my mind too much in terms of potentially breaking through. But, look, she's another one that, you know, that can do it. And the great thing about the WTA is that players like Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova are always on the precipice, because it is just such an open field.
Yep, agree. And speaking of open fields, it's some big first round matchups to come tonight. Carolina Pliskova, she's in action, as is Laura Siegman and Kristina Blanenovic, second up on Court Philippe Chatrier. I thought I'd try and get my French pronunciation right. Oh my god. I'm having such a bad day today. I just need to go and lie down and not awake until the tennis starts tonight. Novak Djokovic in action against Mikhail Emer, and Denis Shapovalov against Gilles Simon on Chatrier. Unbelievable first round matchup, or as Rafa would say, unbelievable. Stefanos Tsitsipas against Jaume Munar. Vasek Pospisil against Matteo Berrettini. So some pretty good matches. Arena Sabalenka on court, as is Sofia Kenin. Jennifer Brady, one of our favourites on this show, in action as well. Sam Querrey against Andre Rublev. We'll get to see how Rublev goes after his title in Hamburg. Bautista Agut against Gasquet. So some really awesome matches. Polmans against Hugo Humbert. I'm not sure he's going to win that one. Sloane Stephens in action, as is Grigor Dimitrov. And we've got some really good matches, and all the doubles action starts tonight as well. And Yelena Ostapenko, 2017 champion, in action on court 9, unseeded 3 years after a win. You wouldn't have thought that would have happened 3 years later, unseeded and playing a first round match on court 9, but that is tennis, I guess. And if you play inconsistently, then that's something that's going to happen, isn't it?
Absolutely. And this sport is all about consistency, and it's about, you know, with the rankings especially, you know, if you have a poor one this year and you had a great one last year, you're in a lot of trouble. You can slip quite severely. So, you know, it's actually one of the biggest coaching points that I have is about a player being consistent in their performances. And we spoke about this on our US Open show. It's a difference between your good and the bad. And that, to me, is the sign of a good player, is if there's a minimal difference between your best and worst tennis. And obviously between your best and worst tennis on a week-to-week basis and on a year-to-year basis. And that's what keeps you at the top of the game for longer. And that's obviously what gets you the results a lot more often than not.
Agree 100%. Mark Sefulis, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure looking into your eyes and talking about the world of coaching and the world of high performance coaching. I'm just trying to be the comic relief today because I've been absolutely shocking. So I think I need a hot water bottle on my head, and I can think about what I'm going to do tomorrow's show. And
here you go, mate. Prepared earlier for you. I didn't even know you were going to say that, but that's perfect. Perfect segue. And thanks very much, Val, for today. And Joel, it's with the weather up there, hopefully they can get through today and get some good matches underway. But yeah, the conditions are really playing a big factor. So if you get an opportunity, you know, you're watching this show, have a chance to watch how they're playing, because it's very different to what you would have seen in a normal French Open. The way the courts are playing, the tactics the players are using, it's really important for both coaches and players to understand the difference between conditions and how to adapt to them.
Exactly right, Mark. Enjoy your babysitting.
Thanks, mate. Will do.
And Joel Ferrucci, thank you very much for your efforts today. It's been fantastic having you as part of the show.
No worries, boys. Good stuff.
And we'll be back tomorrow. Remember, Limber with Lauren, our very own package run by Lauren Scopel, inspired by gymnastics-based training to keep you injury-free. Just $59.90 per year on thetennismenu.com, where you should all be using that. It's absolutely fantastic. You can follow The Tennis Menu on Twitter at The Tennis Menu, Instagram and Facebook as well. And remember, subscribe to our YouTube channel where these videos will go up, and thetennismenu.com for all the drills and anything you need to make yourself a better tennis coach. Val Ferbo, Joel Ferrucci, Mark Sefulis with you every day throughout this French Open. I'm going to head off. I've had a bit of a day like Garbiñe Muguruza. I've got through just. I haven't had the best day, but I'm going to be back even better tomorrow. Have a good one, guys.